You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Colt Molesky. Make sure when you're done listening to this episode, check out all the content on zonecoverage.com. I've got other shows there. There is a slew of fantastic writers putting up coverage for not only the Timberwolves, but all the Minnesota sports happenings and events all over the place, from Vikings to the Wild to the Twins. Go check out zonecoverage.com. And speaking of zonecoverage.com, I have one of the founders on the line. He hasn't been on in quite some time. Tom Schreier, thanks for coming on the podcast.
See, this is what happens, Colton, when I get you bringing on Dane Moore and David Naylor and Mitch Hansen and Tim Fakeless, the editor. You just forget about me, Colton. I got you started, got you warmed up. Now you've taken the reins. Done a good job, I'm going to be honest. I listen to the show, but you forget about old Tom Schreier. He's just dished to the side. He's in a trash can right now.
I'm assuming you're making too many moves out there in the business world to even have time for the Locked On Wolf podcast still.
I would say, you know, I always have time for Locked On Wolf. I had not covered a game in a while. I did the Saturday game against New Orleans. But you know, Tim and Dane have been on the road, hanging out in beautiful South Bend, Indiana on their way to Cleveland.
Road tripping.
By the way. Road tripping. I'm surprised they didn't kill each other. I thought, you know, really what we wanted to do is see the strongest to survive. So I thought, you know, I'd put them in the car for a little bit and see who comes out, Dane or Tim, and somehow both survived. It actually seemed to build chemistry while they were on the road, so that's great.
They both came out alive, and the Cleveland Cavaliers actually killed their roster. So that was actually the one that had to die over the trip.
By the way, just a shout out to anyone who hasn't listened. I listened to the show that they did on the road. I'm assuming over speakerphone with your. Were you in the studio or were you?
Yep.
At
I was in the studio.
Yeah. So the audio quality is not the finest, I will say. That's obviously more related probably to the car and the cell reception in the middle of nowhere, Indiana. But it was a fun listen. You did a good job dealing with those rascals who probably spent too much time pent up in a car together.
Definitely. They were so excited. They were so excited to be doing that podcast. And the audio quality, I warned people at the beginning, it was rough just because on speakerphone in a car isn't the most ideal situation, but that was a really fun podcast to do, and I enjoyed doing it with both those guys who clearly needed a break from just the road.
Right. So I was actually on the road, not doing business. Unfortunately, my friends got a little confused. I thought I told them I was going to do work, and they got mad when I did work, but such is life. But I was, you know, the great thing about that is those are national games, ESPN games. Probably not great for the Wolves, who I think have looked, you know, pretty solid at home. I know that that Sacramento game might debunk my theory there, but
yikes.
But before they kind of hit the road, you know, you kind of looked at some of these losses, especially the Atlanta one, and you're like, what is this team, you know? You know, I kind of, after covering that Saturday game against New Orleans, you know, dealing with Cousins, all that, but I think, you know, well-coached and still have some talent. I was like, man, you know, they're in good position here. They didn't have to, like, grind out that win. Maybe they can get a little rest. I know that the season's getting a little long, and those guys are playing Tibbs minutes, so I'm sure there's some tiredness there. But I was like, you know, this is a Cleveland team that I think they had gotten throttled, right, by Houston right before that Wolves game.
Yeah,
like 120 to 88,
yeah.
It was stupid. I mean, it was ridiculous. And, you know, the team that before they got reconstructed, I mean, I understand it. Look, it makes sense. Cleveland was, we were talking in the regular season, kind of was playing Wolves-level defense. They obviously, I mean, the final play, you know, they're going to LeBron. I know they had Butler on him. LeBron can do stuff like that. And it was exciting. I would say, you know, I was in Denver and just kind of cruising around. Have you been out there, Colton, out to Denver?
I have, actually.
Okay,
just once.
So you know, okay, you know, it's pretty walkable. Like, you can go, you know, bar to bar, restaurant to restaurant. They have breweries like they do, you know, here in the Twin Cities. And we were doing a little bar hopping and releasing our inner Colt Molesky. That is a brand.
We're trying to sell it at zonecoverage.com.
But, you know, we were kind of taking in the sights there. I'd been there before. I have a friend from Littleton, which is right I would say anywhere we went, people were pretty glued to that game. One of the guys I was talking to, you know, Denver's a city where there's a lot of kind of transient people who are out there either for business or it's a fun city, or they're, you know, going out there skiing, snowboarding, whatever. And one of our servers, I think, was from Houston, and he's like, oh yeah, I'm watching this game. You know, I'm kind of curious how the Wolves are playing, just because, you know, he feels like they're kind of nipping on their heels. Now I think we'll learn here, because they're going to play Houston at home and then away pretty quickly. And I think that away game's ESPN game too. But, you know, he was like, yeah, man, this seems like a young team with a lot of talent. And, you know, we know Tibbs has won before and stuff like that. And it was kind of fun just getting different people's perspectives and just seeing how kind of they'll get glued to this game. So I think as an entertainment value, ESPN got what they wanted. I'm sure Tibbs, I mean, our guys were saying, you know, Dane and Tim, who were out there, were saying he was pretty surly, didn't have a lot to say. And it doesn't look good now that they kind of blew up that team. But I would say it was an entertaining game, and I'm hoping maybe compare it to the Atlanta game maybe and some of these other duds on the road, maybe it's a sign that things are getting a little better. But I don't know. How did you feel about that one?
Really, this whole weekend has kind of been the Timberwolves really showing that on defense they're still a very young team. You know, they do not seem, especially against the Bulls, and I know that the Cavaliers have their problems, but LeBron clearly wanted to win that game, and he's, in my opinion, still the best player in the world, so that one you're going to take on the chin. But against the Bulls particularly, and the Kings, a team that's really about worst or second to worst in shooting percentage, in points per game, in three-point shooting, they gave up over 100 points to both those teams and lost to the Bulls, and they looked kind of like lackadaisical, a little out of it on defense. There's just a bunch of games where the Timberwolves should win, but they just aren't disciplined on defense. And then there's some games where they come out flat-footed. Obviously, you think about the couple games they had against the Nets and the Celtics on the road, where they just look flat-footed on both sides of the ball in those games. But there's a bunch of games that they should definitely win if they were locked in like they are for the 34 wins that they have. And they just aren't showing up for every single game. And that's a little I was talking with Dane about this. It's a little disconcerting that a team that's the fourth seed in the Western Conference is coming out and just looks like they don't want it on every single game, especially when a bunch of those are against the Suns, the Magic, the Bulls. So it's a little concerning.
Right. No, I completely agree. And I know we're backtracking a little bit. This is a daily show that you're probably, you know, going day to day with the games. But I like to look at it all encompassing here. And you mentioned the Bulls. That one's painful, if anything, because you know it's high stakes. You know it's a game they're getting out for. That's obviously where Tibbs was, where Butler was. They're playing against Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and then Lauri Markkanen wasn't a Wolf, but they traded him that pick. I think that trade looked like the first thing that came out was Central Tibbs is going and ransacking his old team or whatever. And you know what I mean? And people came out against Gar Pax and all that. I love Jimmy Butler. I think he's done great things for the Wolves. There is going to be an open question. We were talking about this on Wolves Wired, which we recorded last night. We talked about all these games, and we kind of talked about how Butler's, you know, if you sign in that max at 29, what's he looking at? Like 35? There's, you know, there are some things that, questions that have to be answered, even with a star player like that, who I think has brought a positive influence to the locker room. It just seems to have this burning desire to win. And then we talked about, you know, Justin Patton. If he turns out to be anything, it's great that he was part of that trade, but I still believe Dunn's a great defensive player. I don't know if the offensive numbers are inflated a little bit because he's getting more playing time, getting opportunity when on a better team, but I really like him as a defensive player, just really tough guy. And then we just saw Zach LaVine, who doesn't have the defense I think Wiggins is capable of, and probably just would have been kind of trouble for Tibbs, who's so defensive-oriented. But you can tell he's still got the magic, and I'm glad to see it. He was a great guy when he was here. You know, people like Jamal Crawford, who are Seattle-based and know him very well, speak really, really highly of him as a guy. And I got sirens and stuff outside my apartment here.
Gosh, things are going down. So much trouble.
It's Minneapolis for you, man.
I had a question for you before we talk about the Houston game specifically. After that trade, with what Jimmy Butler has done, I think he was a fringe blue chip player headed into the season. And we talked about this going over the summer. I wrote an article for Zone Coverage. We had a podcast about what is a blue chip player and who are the blue chip players around the league. would Jimmy Butler fit into the blue chip player kind of conversation or status because he joined a team that was out of the playoffs, 31 wins, and now they're going to be probably a 45 win team here and one of the top four teams in the Western Conference? Is it fair to call him a blue chip player? Because a lot of this is because of him, not only what he does on the court, but his culture change in the locker room. Is that fair to kind of give him that status now?
Right. I mean, I think, you know, if you're a diehard Chicago fan, you might say, well, is Levine that? Because he hasn't lost that explosiveness and talented shooter and all that. I think the difference is Butler not only has the ability, I think, of a top 15 player. I mean, there's other people that know the league better. I obviously follow the Wolves very closely, but there's guys like you and Dane and Tim and you and stuff who run League Pass and just watch basketball endlessly.
That's a nice way to say we have no other cares in the world other than basketball, and we just ignore everyone else in our lives.
Right. Right. But just from what I've seen and really what I see with Butler is I saw on the ESPN broadcast, they really hammered that, you know, he's been missing these shots. I think he's 0-5 or something in 10 seconds or less when he takes a shot, 10 seconds or less. We also had an open conversation on Wolves Wired about how, well, does Wiggins deserve the ball more in that situation? How about Towns? And the fact that they really have three weapons there and maybe should distribute more, especially because Butler's a great passer. I think the qualities I like most about him is when you look off the court, I mean, he's a no-nonsense guy. He's kind of a goofball when you see him, when he's changed, he's out of uniform, he's away from the court. But he still has that intensity. As someone who nearly stepped on his foot, you move pretty quickly. That guy doesn't mess around.
No, yeah. Well, and we called this headed into the season. You and I actually called this, that we would probably have at least one great Jimmy Butler moment before or after a game every 1 to 2 weeks, just because of how he kind of messes around, how he handles the media. We kind of called that we would have a Jimmy Butler moment on SportsCenter before or after a game at least every 2 weeks.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, he seems to have found this balance. And it may just be natural, I don't know, but being that goofball, he's worn his shorts and sweatshirt backwards. He's just said kind of goofy things, messed around. You can tell he really likes the guys, the trainers and the clubhouse guys, which I really hope these athletes do appreciate how much they're taking care of. But he seems to have that. He'll goof around. He says, you know, you only have three questions, and then guy will sneak in the fourth, and he'll pretend to get mad at him. You can also tell he's very well spoken. When you look at our YouTube, his uncovered YouTube, a lot of the views are on him. Even with star players, you know, Wiggins is a little quieter, but like Towns or whatever that are pretty well spoken as well. But when he's upset about their defense, you know exactly why. He makes no buts about it. I'm assuming he's just kind of repeating what he's saying to the other players. Maybe a little bit cleaner language, but you know, the scouting report, you have to understand, you can't, and this maybe is a fault of the Wolves, you can't, you know, get up for the Chicago game and forget about the Sacramento game, or get up for the Golden State game and forget about Brooklyn and Atlanta, or, you know, like, you have to be, you know, that's a Tibbs thing, that's a Butler thing, you got to be concentrated all the time. On the court, I see intensity. I mean, I know you're a football guy, there's times when he looks to score, that he gets that, like, gleam in his eye that, like, Adrian Peterson had in his prime, where he, I'm sure you remember, he was tossing around linebackers. I know how much he loves football. You had to love Antonio Brown's suit, right? Did you see that on the Saturday?
Oh, yeah, that was awesome. Antonio Brown always has something just a little bit different. He's kind of like the Russell Westbrook almost of style for the NFL.
Yeah. I told Butler, I was like, if you show up to a Steelers, because he's a big Steelers fan, I think he's Steelers and Rams because of Gurley and Brown. And I know he owns, I'm sure you saw this in the Vice video when he was playing dominoes with his buddies in the offseason, he was wearing an Antonio Brown college jersey.
Yep.
He has an LSU Odell Beckham jersey. I think that's on our Twitter, on our YouTube. And then he has a Gurley Georgia jersey. So he's obviously a football guy, Tom Ball, Texas, all that. He seems to kind of have that, like, that mentality and just that kind of spirit of, like, a football player. And it works. Like, he scores. There's times I just laugh. And I'm like, you know, it's the same as when Wiggins throws down a giant dunk or whatever, or Towns will do things that I'm just like, I can't believe human beings can do that. Butler's, though, seems force of will, where with Towns and Wiggins, it seems Wiggins, they've said, is just the best athlete on the on the team, which is saying something. They've got a lot of good athletes. But it's more just amazing that I'm like, I can't believe you just turned around and made that shot. Like, that just seems like an incredibly low percentage. It just seems ridiculous that that happened, and it does seem a little force of will. And it jives perfectly with Tibbs, who, I don't know, maybe you see this too, where he seems like a football coach on the hardwood. He obviously idolizes Bill Belichick and some of these old-school football coaches. And if you replace ice the pick with, you know, move the chains or something like that, you know, a play call, a football play call, he'd look like a football coach, doesn't he? You know, arms yeah. waving and yelling. And we joked around that he sometimes gets in a defensive stance.
He does. He really does.
And so, you know, you get why a guy like Butler just is a perfect fit. You know, it's I think if Tibbs could create a basketball player, it would be Jimmy Butler. And I think those guys take it. The other guys take it on. Towns is obviously very polished. He's gotten better defensively. But they, you know, the intensity is a little harder to see with him. But you know that he has it, or certainly a drive to win. And with Wiggins, it comes out when he, you know, I was covering that Toronto game here, and he dunked on that Poeltl. How do you say that guy's name? I messed that up.
Jakob Poeltl.
Yeah, yeah. You know, he jammed on him twice. And he, like, snarled at him. And I was like, that is the Wiggins they talk about when he just has this kind of intensity, you know, that you don't yeah. see when he's just kind of chilling and talking. You know, he's kind of a laid-back guy, kind of a quiet guy.
Butler's trying to bring kind of an edge to this entire roster, which is good.
Yeah, a Gibson has that. And I think, you know, the funny thing is, like, I think he's been dogged. And, I have some qualms about the contractor. It was kind of question if 3 years, 57 was correct. At least from what I've seen so far. But, you know, he's another guy. He has kind of a laid-back personality. I think that's good when you have all these alpha players there. But, you know, you can see it a little bit with him when he's driving and stuff. And I think you need that. I mean, the margin for victory in the NBA has gotten smaller and smaller. I know the Houston and the Golden State are phenomenal teams. But on any given night, Colton, you know this. Like, you turn on TNT or ESPN, you're starting to see better games. It's no longer just you have to wait around for a Lakers or the Celtics or now the, you know, Golden States or Houston's or whatever. I mean, don't you feel like any given night you're watching a pretty exciting basketball game?
Oh, yeah. And I think that right now this is probably the most spread out the talent has ever been. I think the talent pool in the NBA is massive. It's absolutely yeah. massive, which is why the All-Star game is so much fun, because you have a ton of guys who have an actual viable case to be – on the All-Star roster, and it's so small and the talent pool is so big. That's what makes this time of year so much fun for the NBA, is you're seeing all these guys play with a little chip on their shoulder because they didn't make the All-Star team, even though if it was 10 years ago, they're probably on it just because the talent pool is so big right now. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get into the Houston game that's tonight, as well as getting to the segment we have not done in so long, Tell Me I'm Wrong, where Tom tells me if my theories are way off or on point. Houston is in town tonight. I actually wrote an article for the school paper where I attend Minnesota State Mankato. I wrote an article a little bit about the three-point shooting of the Timberwolves along the deadline, kind of what they were looking for, what wasn't on the market for them. They are atrocious not only shooting but also defending the three-point line, which is key against a team in Houston that is number one in three-point attempts with 42 and 42.6 actually, and number one in three-point makes with 15.6. They also shoot 36.5% from three-point range. That's sixth in the NBA. This team is kind of built to beat a team like the Timberwolves, who are so atrocious against the three-point shot. Let me give you some numbers, Tom, before we really dive into this. From 20 to 24 feet, remember, the three-point line is 23.75 feet out, except in the corners it's 22 feet out. From 20 to 24 feet, the Timberwolves allow 38.9% shooting this season. From 25 to 29 feet, 36.7% shooting. That puts them at 23rd from 25 to 29 feet out, and right around 17, 18 from 20 to 24 feet. Is there any way a team like this can beat the Rockets?
Yeah, we were talking about this. I mean, they have that 13-game home winning streak. This would be the one that challenges them. Not to say they actually have a lot of challenging home games coming up, but Yeah, I mean, so the Wolves, Dane had asked about this, and I think he's going to write about this, how the Wolves are kind of designed around layups and free throws. And the I really like how the Houston team's constructed, just kind of the Morey ball, the, you know, what they call it, like kind of the money ball thing, where they it's threes and, you know, it's efficiency, right? It's all about efficiency, threes and layups. And, yeah, I mean, the way they beat them is defensively. I think the problem with the Wolves is they do get in those sequences where they trade twos for threes. And I think with the current roster construction, what you'd have to do is you'd have to just stem the bleeding as quickly as possible. You can do that with a timeout. You can do that, obviously, with better perimeter defense. But, you know, they can't get into a situation where they're going for three for three. I mean, if that's the case, it's kind of like, it's like the bench guys. It's like Bielitsa and Jamal Crawford. That would just be, you know, Crawford could have like a heater moment and start hitting threes from like half court or whatever. But I don't know if that's what you want to bank on. Yeah.
Well, and
yeah,
two, those guys aren't exactly great defenders, especially Jamal Crawford over the last couple months have been highlighted as kind of one of the poorer defenders on this team. So if you have him out there, sure, maybe he's one of the things that helps you stay with them and keep pace with the three-point shooting, but then you're just sacrificing more defense. And their defensive numbers are bad. The Timberwolves on offense are 29th in the NBA with made threes at 8 per game and with attempts at 22.2. So this team just isn't built to try and keep pace with the Rockets' offense. And so on defense, if you have a couple things you want to see them do defensively to try and keep them in this game, what are some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is the commitment to perimeter defense and just kind of, I'm hoping, you know, what I saw in this stretch where they were winning frequently is that it seemed like Wiggins and Towns had figured out the system, and that kind of made the defense whole. I don't know if that slipped or it's just kind of teams have adjusted the Wolves. It's amazing how quickly these guys consume film and make adjustments and make, you know, the Wolves for some change. But yeah, I think if it is, I feel like Butler and Wiggins should be capable wing defenders. I think, you know, Towns should be if he commits to it. The problem is I just don't see a solution. Like I think there'll be stretches where you look like, man, the Wolves are keeping them in check and it's a fun and competitive game. And then we've seen kind of in those like Golden State games where they come out of halftime, the coach makes an adjustment, all of a sudden they get hot, and it just gets out of control. I mean, it's just crazy how quick that score can run up. And I don't know. I mean, I think what they're going to do is just slow the game down to a slog, which is generally avoid turnovers. And I think Tibbs is just going to be yelling a lot of commands, as he usually does, to make sure that they're on the perimeter, depending. That's the hard thing. Is like it seems like the Wolves can, at best, surpass the Spurs, right? The Spurs are kind of injured, and they just have a culture of winning and are well coached. I think that's what keeps them competitive in the West. But I could see them getting into the three seed and getting like a favorable matchup in the playoffs, which is great. It's a great start of hopefully something better. But man, even just kind of looking at personnel wise and just kind of how they played, Houston, Golden State are just in a different league. They're in a different league from most of the West, but it just, I don't know. I don't know how they compete with that. Like you need some sort of 3-point shooting even with great defense. Cause there's just times when those great players break through and it just seems like they're right. A guy like Harden at times is just, you're unable to defend them.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, one positive you can look at is the times they've won, and it tends to be at home. It's like Oklahoma City, Russell Westbrook goes off, and they just took away his supporting staff, right? Lowry went off, I think. With Toronto, they took away the rest of the team. I think DeRozan had 20, but they didn't let him get way out of control.
You got to keep the guys from, like, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon. You got to keep them from having, like, a 25, 30-point night.
Yeah, no, and so, I mean, that's the one kind of recipe for success I've seen where they just, I think New Orleans had this too, where maybe like it was Davis who went off and they just took away the rest. I guess if you let like Harden go off and then just take away, you're right, the players you mentioned, take them out of the equation and then just get balanced scoring, which they have typically got in games where they win. That's their formula to win here. That's probably how it would go. They just have so many weapons. And guys like Chris Paul and stuff are so smart. They probably, possession to possession, make adjustments, right? Yeah. I mean, that's just really hard to do when you have young guys like Wiggins and Towns who are still figuring out the system and probably just a roster that needs some enhancements. That's just how kind of teams develop. You know, it kind of goes year to year, stage to stage. continual little developments that tend to build up over time. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's your best hope, is that maybe a guy like Harden goes off. But, yeah, balanced scoring, you play good enough defense, you take away a supporting cast, you sneak out and win. I mean, I think that's kind of how a win would go.
The other factor, too, is if Jimmy Butler kind of plays like he did against LeBron, where he's kind of showing why he should be in the conversation for MVP, if he plays that way against Harden, and you have guys like Wiggins locking down the second-best offensive player, then you could really stay in this game just because Butler is making everything that he's putting up.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I should say this. I think it's very unlikely they win, but there is a way they would do it. I think what you should do is, you know, you got Houston here, and then flip night, which is Thursday, and I go back to him. I was fortunate to cover him just for that one year he was here, and obviously I grew up watching him, and he was a great guy. You know, he really has his fingerprints on this, and I think that's going to be like an emotional night and a game that would seem bigger than it would be otherwise for the Lakers at home.
Yeah.
And then you have the Houston one, and I think if you should look at it, especially the two Houston games, because it's going to tell you a lot about the Wolves. Can they sneak out wins at home? That's going to be probably key if you can get home court advantage, obviously, in the playoffs. How can they compete against the best in the West? We've already seen a couple games against, you know, Golden State. And then how different are they home and road? I mean, that is becoming a big story, right? Just that they look great here. I mean, it's great that they're going to start to fill up the Target Center. It's becoming a place to go, you know, a place to be if you're a fan. And at the same time, people will probably watch them on the road and be like, who are these guys, right? So.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I mean, there's a chance to sneak out a win here at home, even if Harden plays really well, as long as they kind of take away some running cast. It just seems like that plumbing doesn't work or hasn't worked for them on the road, which is trouble.
Before we head out here, we got to do the segment of Tell Me I'm Wrong, where Tom, the older, the wiser of the two of us, tells me if my basketball theories, my basketball observations are on the mark or a big miss. And I've got two for you today. My first one is, after all the moves that Cleveland made, I still think that the Raptors are the best team in the East, despite the moves that Cleveland made to put Rodney Hood, George Hill, Clarkson, Nance around LeBron James. The Toronto Raptors are still the best team in the Eastern Conference. Tell me I'm wrong, Tim. Tell me I'm wrong, Tom. What are the thoughts here?
That's a great question. I think, you know, at the end of the day, right, you know, if one team with LeBron, I like what they did. I'm very curious how a team that, like, doesn't practice much and whatever is going to adjust to all these new guys trying to play together. I know they made a statement against Boston and all that. The reason why I love Toronto is that I think they're very well coached, and they just seem committed to the things you need to be committed to. I know that they've had troubles in the playoffs, but you'd think a team that good defensively has multiple weapons, all that, would have success. I just think at the end of the day, Cleveland, you know, goes to another gear. I think it just comes down to how much chemistry can they create in the season to get ready for the postseason. I still think Cleveland's the best team, but I think it's now becoming an open question, especially with how well Brad Stevens coaches and how talented that Celtics team is, and just, again, how well, you know, Dwayne Casey and the coaches the Raptors and the talent they have. So it's more of an open question, I think, going into the playoffs. Or kind of, let's say, the stretch, you know, the dog days of the season. It's more of a question than it's ever been. We always make fun of the East. But I think there's three teams that are really, really interesting.
For my second question for you, Mr. Fourth Quarter is now in a Lakers jersey. Isaiah Thomas, in one of the many moves that the Cleveland Cavaliers made, he's already in L.A. playing for the Lakers. He dropped 22 points the other night in his debut game. He has had problems not only with the hip injury, with getting traded around, stunned by Boston, leaving that team, but he has also had a lot of problems in the locker room. You saw all the stuff with criticizing his team's defense when he was on Cleveland, how he said they lacked effort, not diving for loose balls, how that wasn't acceptable in places where he played like Boston. He questioned Love's hand. He said that he got his powers back in a loss to the Dallas Mavericks, where he recorded 5 fouls in the fourth quarter, a little opposite from his performances in Boston. My prediction is that Isaiah Thomas will be playing in the European League next season. Tell me I'm wrong, Tom.
Wow. The thing I worry about with him is that, you know, he went from a guy who I think was very beloved in Boston, and, you know, the response I got from people there was like, man, this is a cold league. They can ship him out that quick. But I look at, like, a guy like Johnny Flynn, and he's not the only one. Hips are tough. I mean, it's just, I get that people are so upset about the Johnny Flynn draft when he could have Curry, but that makes a lot of sense, obviously. But I look at him in isolation and how great he was in college and just, like, the moments he had in the NBA where he was great, and I was like, I think the hip has a lot to do with it. And it's just kind of sad when injuries kind of sap a promising player's career. And man, Europe next year, I don't know. I think if anything, he may not have wanted to be like in Cleveland post LeBron, and maybe saw that as a possibility because it is. And he may have just said, "F it." It was like, I'm just gonna coach everything.
You know, just burn all my bridges here. I'm done.
Right. The difference with the Lakers is he's been part of a historic franchise where he's in the spotlight. Obviously, you talk about that tough East Coast Boston media. In LA, I don't think it's as tough, but it's a massive media market. Obviously, it's like the biggest media market in the U.S. He may just see this as, I'm going to get into good graces here, and I'm going to come to the Lakers when I was in Boston. The thing that will prevent him from that is physical. It's an injury that maybe becomes tough to overcome. I don't know if Johnny Flynn's been playing anymore. I know he was playing in Australia for a little bit. There was a Brantman article saying he's trying to get back in or whatever. But, I mean, the reality is the injury seemed to kind of take away any possibility of that. I don't see him going to Scott State, and the reason why I could see him staying is maybe a team like LA just wants a guy that is telling, hey, look, it's showtime. It's, you know, you have to have talent to win the NBA. It's, you know, there's a lot of great things about LA and being a Laker, but you got to do the small things, right? Kids always talk about that, passing your teammates, getting on the floor, playing defense. I think that's something that maybe you want a guy like that in the locker room, even if you're kind of taking a risk on him as an NBA player, and maybe that gives him a little more longevity than he'd have otherwise in the NBA. I mean, that's my hope if I'm a Isaiah Thomas guy, right?
Well, I mean, the problem here, too, is I really think he probably should have gotten that hip surgery that they were talking about at the end of last year, and he didn't do to kind of show that he really wanted to play in his contract year for a big contract. He didn't go with the hip surgery, and now coming back from the injury, there are some times, especially late in the games, where it just doesn't look like he's getting the same pop on his shot, which is a big deal anyways, but even more important if you're 5'7", and the thing that made dangerous was that you were getting that shot off quickly and you're getting it off high. And now that he's not able to get that same lift late in a game off his shot, and he looks kind of hampered by that, it's easier to defend him, especially one-on-one, because he's not getting that separation.
Yeah, I think that's completely right. And that, you know, you always worry about that with small athletes across all sports. You know, if Darren Sproles type in the NFL or whatever has a big knee injury, well, does he have any explosiveness to get around tackles or whatever? I think of Jared McKinnon, if you want a local example or whatever. But, same thing with hockey players, a smaller defenseman. You know, that's the advantage they have over the bigger guys. And I think that's a really good point with Thomas. I really hope he can kind of stick around, because I just think a guy with that mentality, he was the last pick right in this draft.
The very last one.
Yes, I think guys like that just learn to be scrappy. You know, you have to look for every edge, because you're not really, like, supposed to be in the NBA in some sense. I mean, I know you got drafted, that's still significant, but you're not, you know, you're not a guaranteed contract coming away with all that. You usually bounce around. And, I hope, if anything, even if he's not the same player he was, he plays an NBA role, because I really think it's important to have people that kind of, they mind the P's and Q's, right? And they're going to get on other guys for not doing that. And if he came destructive in Cleveland, maybe he can turn it into a positive with L.A.
No, yeah. And, gosh, it's just so tough being short in sports, just in general. It's so tough. It really is. And this is coming from somebody who was a 5'11 receiver in high school and at D3 college. It's just really tough to be short in sports at any level, no matter what sport you're playing. It really sucks.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm curious what the future holds, but it isn't really getting for him, and it may work out on both sides. I mean, who knows? You know, Cleveland may benefit from all these trades and kind of doing the best with a trade that didn't work out, obviously. But with LA, I mean, they have to set a foundation there. I mean, I know they're going to try to attract people with the history of the program, and they, you know, LA is a great place to live. A lot of the players are there anyways. And so, you know, they're going to try to do it through free agency, but you have to have a foundation set, I think, there in order for it to work. And hopefully a guy like that is kind of a foundation setter, I guess.
Well, he hasn't been on in a while, but Tom, it was really fun having you back on the show. I promise your next appearance will not be as long as the one in between this one and the last time you've been on. I promise we'll have you on soon.
It's always fun. I'm sure I'll jump on and look forward to it. It's always a great listen. And yeah, it's exciting stuff.
And make sure, listener, make sure that you go on zonecoverage.com after you're done listening to this podcast. There's tons of great content on there, whether you want to go check out the YouTube page, whether you want to check out some more podcasts, or if you want to read some really great articles from our staff, our writing staff there, make sure to go check out all that at zonecoverage.com and go check out all the other podcasts on the Locked On Network. Thanks, Tom, for coming on, and thank you for listening to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.